So, when we started this program, David had the mistaken idea that this is a very contentious community. And now I am sure he has changed his opinion. And the second thing is that there hasn't been all that much progress in the business. So I want to take the first few minutes to list what I consider are the types of progress that have been made in the last few years. I think it might be a good starting point. For this, the point of reference I have is another meeting we had at the Institute for Advanced Study a few years ago. Many of you were there. And there are more things here than there were there. So I will try to only talk about those issues that were considered there and here. So, and there are many other issues that are not considered here, so we will not worry about them. Now, I will not say name people who have made the progress in these areas, because some of them are here and some of them are not here and all that. And I will not even initially start asking how relevant is it to hydrodynamic turbulence, and we will go towards that in the end. So the first one in which I think now progress has been made in a way everybody agrees and understands is this forced burgers. Uriel Fish gave a good survey of the whole thing. Even as late as about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, there were contentions about what was the right method to use, what was the power law exponent for the velocity differences. I think now this problem has been sorted out in ways people understand. There may be far from the perspective of someone like Peter, there may be still issues, and there are issues, but at least the one of the principal issues seems to have been sorted out. The other thing that I think is important that has happened is about 2D turbulence. 2D turbulence, there was theory for some time, as you know, but then there have been experiments and simulations which have established several things. To the extent I understand that there is an inverse cascade, and so this was not obvious to start with, although there was theory already, and then that it is non-intermittent, so all the probability densities are Gaussian to the extent you can decide experimentally and numerically. I think that is coming together, I would say. There is significant progress made in this business. There are still issues, but okay, so what's that? Non-intermittent. It's non-intermittent. And then the third problem on which I think the progress has been considerable is this Craignan's passive scalar problem. Now, at least 4 years ago, I know there were several results and it wasn't clear how things were fitting together. People were looking at different corners of it and all this stuff. And as a result of the work of a number of people here and some who are not here, I think things are pretty clear that there is anomaly has been established, that there is an anomaly. And in fact, exponents have been calculated. And the physics of anomaly has been described in terms of these Lagrangian trajectories and things like that. And there are still things to be done, like people haven't computed the structure functions, etc. But let's say, so there are many things to be done. And there are even little things, as I understand, about the rate of convergence with the dimensionality of the passive scalar problem. But, you know, the progress that's been made, I think, is one might say, in this business, if I might be allowed to use a superlative, it's a spectacular progress in this small part of the world. Now, well, you can also ask things like, what is the relevance of any of this to real problems, which is a good question to ask. In fact, only last year, I think I asked Massimo this question, and he told me yesterday that it was partly as a response to this that he actually showed us how he can extend it to the case of finite velocity correlations. Here, as you know, this model assumes that the velocity varies rapidly, very rapidly, and he relaxed that, and he showed us some very interesting results on this yesterday. And in fact, the similar ideas have been extended by, let's say, people like Misha Chertkov to polymers, although the thing has to still go on for a bit longer. And conceptually, I think it was not at all clear that what is now known as the zero modes are responsible for anomaly. I think it's a qualitatively interesting idea and important one. And the Lagrangian description that was found useful there is finding other uses, for example, in the sorts of thing, let's say, Boris was describing a few days ago. So I think on the whole, these are, I mean, there are other things that I will list out where progress has been made, but perhaps not as definitively as here. But so let me then say, leaving that aside, some new things that were not there about 4 years ago have actually happened, as far as I can see. Let me list some of them. In terms of experiments, for instance, there were hardly any measurements of Lagrangian statistics. Now, I think we saw a very nice experiment on that. And combine this with numerical data that's been around for a while, together we sort of learn already how various things, such as, let us say, the acceleration statistics vary as a function of Reynolds number. We have some very good idea on this kind of stuff. So this is new. That was simply not there about 4 years ago, which is a point of reference I'm using. And then there are also experiments which in some sense are extending the domain in terms of the region of parameter space you can cover. For example, the experiments of the sort that Russ described in using helium. And you just heard a little while ago, they have been extended in terms of accuracy or precision with which can be made by Gunther, for instance. So these are all the things that are happening. So let's say extended range. People have measured in the atmosphere, like Arcadi parameter ranges here. So you can ask more precise questions and more definitive answers you can seek. And in terms of a theory, where somewhat hearsay judgment on this, I think over the many years, the bounds theory, the upper bound theory, for instance, of the sort that, let's say, Doring described, and in which Peter has been involved for a while, has slowly been making more and more important and interesting, let's say, inroads. For example, I remember the first paper that Charlie and Peter wrote together, where they had bounds on the energy dissipation in the channel flow, and I asked him, that is Doring at the time, what does it take for you to get the similar bounds for the isotropic homogeneous turbulence? This was many years ago. Today, he showed us something about it. Now, I think, therefore, I would consider that, on the whole, some progress that's been made, and it's a slow progress. It is not like there is one sudden step. And the other interesting development is this relation between geometry and geometry and shape dynamics, I shall say, of the sort that Boris Schreiman and Alan Pumier talked about. This is now a case where you are bringing in geometry into your statistics, and it is got to be one of the important developments on the whole. And there are also other things of the sort that Viktor Yakov talked about, which is a little bit more recent and more temporal in some sense. That is, he is talking about things like small parameter and so on. This, of course, we will have to wait and see. Now, there is another interesting development, which always has been the case in many good developments, and there is the interaction between theory and experiment. For instance, there have been, as the precision of experiments has gone up and the Reynolds number range covered has gone up, what's happened is that we are beginning to see that the picture that one had about universality and things of that sort is not as simple as it was before. It's becoming more and more complex. For instance, you measure the transverse exponents in shear flow, they might show a slight difference from the longitudinal ones. Or you measure, let's say, the skewness and the fifth moment of the velocity derivative in the direction of the shear. At least they don't decay as fast as they're supposed to decay with Reynolds number according to usual conventional arguments. So things are a little bit more, at least a little bit more complicated than people had thought before. And all of this, we are at least beginning to understand that there are such things, and we are beginning to understand how to deal with that. One useful machinery, which I myself have found appropriate to discuss this, is this business of, let's say, projecting onto isotropic sector, about which Itamar had talked about a number of times in terms of remarks. So I think we are beginning to understand the limitations of the meaning of universality in this business, and not everything that was supposed to be universal isn't. And so we are making some progress there. So in general, I would say that all of what has happened is a combination of experiment, theory, and simulations. Together, they have worked to make sizable progress in issues relating to small scales. So, and let me also mention here other things. Like, for example, you start with an issue like mixing, which is a very important thing. And as Professor Narasimha said, maybe it's an overused term, but nevertheless I use the word mixing. For instance, just at this meeting we learned two interesting things. I don't know, one of them doesn't surprise me, and the other I don't know if it is exactly true or not yet. One is that turbulent mixing is much more efficient than chaotic mixing. I mean, it's for people in turbulence, this is not a very surprising thing, but there was a quantification of this, for instance, which I thought was very nice and interesting. And some of what Emmanuel Willema mentioned may have gone past some of us here, but he made some important points. I don't know if they are exactly right at the moment, but you may recall or not recall. So suppose I have a spectral density, let us say like this. So it's on large scale. Let's say this is the velocity spectrum. Or let's say this is the temperature spectrum. It's the wave number here. So if you put in let us say, a forcing there, and you ask, how long does it take for it to get to the very smallest scales? The conventional arguments tell you that this is related to the eddy turnover time at that scale. That's what any Kolmogorov type argument would suggest. But in fact, Emanuel's measurement showed that the time scale was much faster. Time scale to get from there to there was much faster and was of the order of the large scale in the injection that he was discussing. Now, he actually called it a short circuit to cascade, for instance. So this is a new idea. I mean, I don't know if this is will be borne out or whether it will survive, but his measurement showed that something like that was actually true. So there's a direct coupling from some intermediate scale to the very smallest scale. One of the other things he mentioned, which also might or might not survive, I don't know, is that there is a... he had this model, you remember, where all these little things were coming from all directions. He said that, if you give me a single point PDF, he will tell us about the PDFs of differences. I don't necessarily believe that that might be so, but there's some interesting ideas in general. Okay, so, et cetera, okay, so I will leave it like that. But there are other issues on which no progress has been made. And then I want to have here a list of things where progress hasn't been made but are small enough problems that we can actually make progress over some finite amount of time. So that's I will then stop. Now, Anatole Roshko brought up issues about transport, for instance. This community in general has paid very little attention to transport, aside from things like the upper bounds that we have heard from these two guys here. Now, transport, however, is a very big problem. It's not something you would just solve like that. It's been around for God knows how long. So you should really cut it down to smaller problems if you can. It's not entirely clear how to do this. But one issue that I think would be very interesting to talk about is, after all, the transport is related to a large-scale velocity and a large-scale, length scale of the large structure in the flow. Now, turbulent flows have upon them a large scale somehow superimposed. That is, it is not, the large scale that you have is not simply a coarse graining of small scales going on and on up to the largest scale, whatever that is. So it is an imposed scale in some sense. Now, where does it come from? Does it come from initial conditions? Or does it come from some kind of global instability in the flow? Now, this is something that one has to discuss. And Anatole actually implied, and several people, including myself, have made some modest attempts to quantify this. And the issue is one of trying to answer whether the large scale is the result of some, within quotation marks, the instability of some caricature of the flow. You recall he actually said the mixing layer perhaps is something like a row of vortices, and then you can think of it as a vortex sheet which is undergoing some type of Kelvin-Helmholtz instability. But that's waving hands because you really are not describing the problem properly. But I want to simply say that there is some kind of instability within quotation marks. Do not think of this as linear instability or any such thing. I don't exactly know what I'm saying. But this is a concept which one can make more precise. And I think the value of that exercise would be very high indeed. It's something one can do. It requires a little bit of work. So I would say the large scale and its relation to instability. As I said, within quotation marks, as I say, I don't know exactly what is unstable, what kind of instability it is, but it is an important question to ask, an important question for which an answer would be very valuable. I'll make some more remarks and then I'll be done. Now, there are always these issues like drag reduction, etc., which Fazlullah Hussain talked about. and on which we have done zero progress, I mean, as compared to 4 years in terms of the definiteness that I used in to describe these. I mean, there is progress. In his own laboratory, progress has been made, for instance. Now, again, there are issues such as the role of initial conditions. I will not dwell upon. Okay, so this is, in my view, one of the problems, important ones, on which we can make some progress. Now, here my list is very small, but I would like you to add to that. Let's say some questions. Worth posing for a reasonably short time. I don't know. 6 months or 5 years is a reasonable time, I would say. My own perspective is. So 5 years from now, David, we will have another program, and then I make another list for you. I don't know. I think I might as well leave here. But let us say, I don't know. I mean, I feel very reluctant to make this list. But let me just say, role of worms with respect to anomaly, okay? Now, Itamar already pointed out that in the passive scalar field, you don't need anything like worms to get anomalous behavior. The question, worm are those small little vortex filament structures about which Arkady usually makes some remarks. He usually says, he usually makes a remark that it is useless kind of stuff and all that. No. But it may be, I don't know. All right. Okay. All right. So this is which I have not read. So I must confess, Arkady 68 already has the solution, but we will look at it. So that doesn't take us very very long to look at that. Now, there are many experiments which use this so-called extended scale similarity without understanding what it means. It works, and that's a very good thing in favor of it. The fact is, we don't know what it exactly means. Okay, so things like this. Now let us add to this list. I can add some more, but I am not prejudiced to. Yeah. This is a constant in. You said 68, so. Okay. Why not, Peter? I'm very flexible, as you see, because I don't know too well about this whole business. So, okay. There is one final remark I will make. I left a little space here. And the remark is, Gunter's measurements are a case in point today. I think we have to raise the level of the business continually. We, experimentalists, which I include very much myself, have to increase not only the range of Reynolds numbers which we are continually seeking going to various types of flows, but also increase the precision and also bring to bear new techniques that measure the kinds of things that make direct sense and can make direct relevance to theory. So this is a challenge for experimentalists, and I think unless you raise the level continually, we will fall further and further back in this business. In fact, a large number of comparisons that experiments and theory make, as Rodham Narasimha was mentioning yesterday, it's not clear that this comparison is always always very satisfactory. Now, I think, therefore, there is a need to, I hate to say this kind of stuff, but raise our level. I mean, I say this on behalf of all of us. Continue. What's that? I refuse to take the bait. My own belief is that if you have some outstanding stuff going, money is usually not so hard. What's that? Because it sustains everything. It's the foundation of everything. So, no, no, it's the foundation of everything, so it has to be at the bottom. Now, the same thing holds for theory, and of course, same thing holds for simulations, and the same thing holds especially for comparisons between experiment theory and simulations. We sometimes tend to make comparisons, even when comparisons are not called for. Of course, we make progress in that way, because then we will know somebody points out that that's not the right comparison to make, whatever. But perhaps the thing to do is leave with this remark, and then invite you to add to that list that we can address in the next few months. So thank you. I'm sorry I took so long. Victor, by the way, gave me this transparency, which you might be interested in. Yeah, yeah. He said, well, there are Newton's laws, and then you have a large number of particles, you get to statistical mechanics, and you know the hydrodynamic limit where you work. And now you go to very high Reynolds numbers. This, of course, is not a problem for the next 6 months, by the way. Are we to stay within the Navier-Stokes equations as our God-given equations, or do we need a breakthrough? In other words, are we ever going to get another set of more appropriate equations? I think it's an interesting question, and that's what all the closure people have been working on for, you know, forever, in some form or another. And Victor showed us very interesting ways of closing pressure-velocity type correlations. But the jury on that, of course, is out. Everybody is looking for something like that in some sense or another all the time. No, no, that's not what he's talking about. No, no, no. Yeah. No, that's not. No, he's not talking about it. He knows that very well. Yeah. No, 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 no. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, Visha. Yeah.
No, no, I mean, don't raise, Sweeney. No, please. Ah, raise, yeah. Because I want to add, not. Okay. Oh, no, but now I cannot add to it because
okay, all right.
my level is still low. I apologize for it. I basically agree, and it's really a very good picture. I just want to add a couple of details because, and this is a very important detail. What is missing here is a direct cascade because Patrick did not tell this time. And there was a set of really very good new measurements. And what is important, I think it's also a matter of attitude, because we used to think about turbulence problem as very, very difficult, and we would like to add something to clear out some this aspect or that aspect, and not that often that we ask ourselves, okay, let's start the problem and finish the problem. And we'll say, this is finished, this is done, everything is okay. I believe that together with the passive scalar modular sum corrections, to what extent we qualitatively according to Maxim understand. This is another example, and I put here, according to Jean Suchet, Mark, because this is the case indeed where we have a very old classical theory about pair correlated due to Kreitner, Batchelor, and Leys. We have our theory with Lebedev about high order correlation function. We have experiments which are pretty precise and which literally corresponds to the theory in this case. Theory is incomplete in a sense that we cannot calculate numbers. We calculate only R dependencies, which are scalings and logarithms. And those numbers, I believe, is impossible to calculate within present formalism and for maybe for many years ahead. They're not that interesting, and some of them certainly non-universal. But as long as the basic questions that we would like to get cleared in other cases, here they are cleared. We know all R dependencies of correlation function. We measure them experimentally. They coincide with the theory. The problem is closed. I would like to stress this because this is not so often happen. In this respect, what else you would like to know but afraid to ask about Dirac's case? Ask it. No, I'm telling now about Dirac cascade in 2D. I'm not talking about passive scalar. I'm saying that there is a theory of Dirac entropy cascade in 2D, and there is a set of experiments, a beautiful one. Some things unpublished, but I think that they are more or less disseminated from the point of experiment. They coincide clearly. There is no intermittency in the Dirac cascade as well. We know all R dependencies. We know how passive scalar behave imposed on the direct cascade of vorticity. The problem, I believe, is closed. I challenge everybody to question me on this, but that's my statement. Yeah. I agree 100%. That's why. Okay, and now let me finish the sentence, if you don't mind. I agree 100%. That's why I don't put this here. We don't have theory of two-dimensional turbulence, which would include both Dirac and inverse cascade. But in the situation where we don't have inverse cascade with a constant pile-up at large scale, and this situation, whatever you call real world, what happens in the Patry Club and in many other situations, or you don't call it real world, it exists. And in this very sense, we have an understanding of Dirac cascade. And that's why I put this mark here. We do understand Dirac cascade. It might be that we have a pile up at large scale, then we have both direct and inverse cascade, and inverse cascade is non-steady, and our theory, of course, works too, and we can clearly say in what sense, but anyway, this is out of question here. What matters is that as long as we have direct cascade, we understand it completely. This problem is solved. Okay? Now,
there are some challenges here, okay. But I would let Grisha finish
quickly, if he has anything to add, and then you take up.
No. I think it's better go not by person but by subject. I'll better give it and then I'll jump.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mark. I think Sherkov wants to make a remark.
I didn't agree with the reason.
Now it's. I think the issue is reasonably clear. Gregory, I ain't had the close. Second, you are the next. Are you done?
No, I just want to add
one. He wants to add one. Also, again, take him to task later.
Less power, nothing like this. Visha.
You know what I did? I put further study of direct cascade in 2D as one of the things we will do. So we will have to move on from there.
Okay.
Leave the floor for Gregory. You have the next. After
if
this.
You allow me to finish, I just want to make this.
Yeah.
As please. The second one I want to make here, somehow speaking of basic scalar, basic vector, and basic tensor, which are polygons, I think that this was a very important progress made exactly in the same year, which went more or less in parallel with the progress of anomalous theory. And this was a study that was long considered. I think that there was enormous progress here in the sense that in this particular case of the logical specialist move, we can treat analytically absolutely arbitrary statistics of the logical field and make statements about spaces scalar, for compressible and compressible, about spaces vector. It means the first time we have consistent theory of kinematic dynamics.
Can you make a comment before you?
Okay.
Both questions.
Peter has to run, but although he had a number later in the hierarchy, I'll make him yield the floor for him.
I think that we are discovering maybe this is not really anywhere on the blackboard or doesn't fit on the blackboard, but I think that we're discovering that statistical solutions of the Euler and Navier-Stokes equations start to be closer to us. We start, although they are still in function space, they are still far away, people start getting a little closer to them, and especially in the Lagrangian frame. So it will be very useful, and we all work basically on the same thing, it will be very useful to make contact of these progresses with real problems with boundaries. So I think that this is one of the things that I think that we should try to work on. Of course, physicists will get there much before mathematicians, but I think that's a good direction to combine this Lagrangian ideas with, let's say, the simplest parallel flows or channel flows or that have some boundaries. So that's just a...
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Gregory?
One thing that I think that appears
And interestingly enough, and this is actually going to be a new thing that Shruti left out, but it's going to also partly answer to Krish's comment about the direct escape being closed. Anyways, actually, I think one of the things that I thought that was really new in the field, I don't know if I'm going to put it, oh, there it goes that way. One of the, I mean, there are relatively few really new ideas that appear in this field, but actually, in addition to some of this, I think one of the nice ideas was this idea of looking at inverse structure functions, which is basically very natural from the point of view of probability theory because you're looking at statistics like hitting times. There wasn't any really... Pardon? I mean, just... Well, I think the idea of actually trying to measure this either experimentally or numerically is just a well, okay. I mean, it's a new theoretical. It's a theoretical concept that I've never seen employed before in the field, and I think it's actually a quite novel one that can reveal some new information. And just as an example of that, I mean, I've discussed this privately with some people, but I would like to give as an example how this actually might show that there is intermittency in the direct cascade. Okay. By the way, I should preface this remark by another one, which is that I largely agree with what Grisha said here. I think that there is now really remarkable agreement between theory and experiment and simulation in this whole area. And, I mean, we may quibble about some details about, oh, what you do if you prepare the system in a slightly different way, but for the cases in which the theory has been derived, I think that there's been remarkable coincidence in this area. So I think that I would agree with Grisha that there really is a lot of a very good understanding that's been obtained here, and it's really something that now we can say with a lot of confidence that we understand things. I wouldn't declare the subject dead, however, and let me just give my little example. So I've discussed this with several people, and maybe some people will actually carry this out, like Patrick. But, you know, let me sort of just sketch this in multifractal terms, because the picture that I have of the 2D direct cascade within the multifractal picture is that you can have something basically like this. Your multifractal spectrum for the vorticity field has a minimum exponent right here of h equals 0, and that's Grisha's logarithms. And we understand very well the dynamics for that. In fact, the 2D Euler dynamics can at most, at infinite time, produce h equals 0 Holder singularities in the vorticity. There are rigorous Wollobner-type estimates that state that. But that doesn't mean that there can't be intermittency in the sense that there is less singular behavior. No, I'll say in a minute. You can have more laminar behavior. Now, the point is that positive structure functions, by definition, when you have a multifractal spectrum, only pick up contributions from the left side. But what you need to pick up contributions from this side is the technique like inverse structure function. So, in fact, the kind of intermittency that could exist in the 2D direct cascade really comes from things that are more smooth than the h equals 0 part that you see in the logarithms. Okay. So I guess the point is that I don't have any theory, and I don't think anyone does, for what this multifractal spectrum is over here, which I think certainly probably does exist in the direct cascade. So I don't... Okay, but anyway, so I'm saying that this is actually... I think that it's premature to declare the subject dead. This is, in any case, a nice experiment that could be done numerically or... experimentally. Well, no, I don't think this is actually a hard thing to do at all.
If you want to get the positive part of it.
But I'm saying that's exactly where the inverse structure function technique is perfect. Okay. I can't resist, you know, to add one more thing. Actually, I mean, Boris, you know, in his talk actually mentioned the Hopf equation and said that, in fact, it's very hard to work with. Field theorists are not so frightened by equations like that, but I do think that the use of functional methods is something that deserves to be explored in the next couple of years, and there have been many types of uses of that. I think the main successes have all been over here, because in fact, what people really have been doing over here is, I mean, if you look at the work that was done on passive skaters, people have actually made use of things like the Martin-Sigur-Rose path integral formalism. People have actually made use of essentially the Hopf equation or the moments that follow from that. So there have been real success over here. I mean, also, there have been some interesting attempts to apply these things more broadly. I mean, there are the instant time type methods, for example, in principle can be applied outside these types of models. They could also be applied to real Navier-Stokes. I mean, the kind of Rayleigh-Ritz stuff that I was trying today falls in this category as well. But I have to say that, you know, the use of such functional approaches for Navier-Stokes have been, I would say, far from great successes. And so I think there's a real question about the use of such functional approaches for Navier-Stokes. Anyways, okay.
You don't hear just without that? Do you? No, you are here. I should be careful because it is recorded, yes? All right. First of all, Burger's equation, and I want to relate it to what Gregory was telling today, because I have a kind of a common question. Gregory, I understand that you're very busy, but anyhow. What Gregory did today, as far as I understand, is he introduced a kind of random forcing, crudely speaking, into the Navier-Stokes. You did, okay? Whatever. Now, what people do with forced burgers, they are doing the same. But the most sexy aspect of turbulence, genuine Navier-Stokes, is that it has a property of self-randomization and self-stochasticization. So you don't need any forcing in this in a way. So it doesn't care about forcing. And this is the most important thing, because here, if you take burgers or anything else, it's dead without forcing. But this is what I'm concerned of. And I'm trying to fix the point, because I would like to be sure that I understand the things right. Also, I'm continuously learning. Okay, that's first thing. And of course, this relates to things like the reasons or explanations of why, odd moments in genuine 3D turbulence are positive. Is it right? It probably relates to things like that, that this such a thing is positive. Odd moments are non-zero. Okay, this particular moment is positive, okay? Of course, what I'm saying now is, of course, in a way, a trivial thing. But I have still to remind you, in terminology of Edward Spielberg, that these problems are what he considered, he termed them small t's. He termed them small t's. The big T is the genuine 3D Navier-Stokes turbulence. Now, what I would like also to add, I have many things to add, but I'm not going to do all of them because of lack of time. In 2D turbulence, the right analogy, if such exists with 3D, is that you have to raise the level. Vorticity is analogous to velocity, and if you want to go to something analogous to vorticity, you have to go to the gradient of vorticity or whatever. And then you are in a position that you have, again, non-zero odd moments of a similar kind. Just see this as gradients of vorticity. And you encounter a number of problems which are of the same kind, and I don't think that they are so easily resolved. And if maybe somebody knows the answers, but I do not. And I will stop for the moment. If there will be some time more, I will get on.
Thank you. Bob?
Okay. The subject that isn't listed here, that was once very popular, is detailed vortex interactions. Really understanding the dynamics, the detailed dynamics of the small scales that are generated by the Navier-Stokes equation. From a physical point of view, you could say that the Navier-Stokes equations are our quantum mechanics. But how are we going to, how did people go from quantum mechanics to something like the renormalization group and an understanding of various phase transitions and things like that? Well, they were able to do that because we knew what the detailed spin interactions were in various types of lattice models and other related models. The related structures that develop in turbulence seem to be small-scale vortex structures. And note that I'm not just saying vortex tubes, I'm just saying generic vortex structures. We don't even know for sure what type of vortex structures drive turbulence. We see the vortex tubes in the simulations, but we really don't even know if that's what drives the turbulence. And so, you know, a couple pet peeves that I have is one on the singularity issue. And you have 1991. And let's say less than 1991 and greater than 1991. In 1991, there was this workshop here on topological fluid mechanics where I presented for the first time my fairly strong result that there probably is a singularity of 3D incompressible Euler. Now, before 1991, there were a huge number of people who were working on this problem, including a lot of people who are at this meeting. I mean, we have Pumir, we have Hussein, earlier we had Zen Shushev, we had Uriel Frisch, we had Eric Sigia. And basically, in 1991, everyone sort of evaporated from the scene. And so we have after 1991, where practically I'm the only one who sort of continued to pursue this issue. You know, why has everyone dropped this? You know, my other pet peeve is you talk about multifractal singularities. I mean, the only example of a singularity developing from our fundamental equations is the thing that I came up with and presented in 1991. And it is not your classical multifractal singularity. I mean, multifractal analysis tells us a lot about the bounds on what this type of singularity could be. But the structure that's typically assumed is not what I see. So, you know, I'd like some people to come back into this issue and, you know, start doing other examples of this and let's really see what's going on. And the real important issue that is missing is not just understanding what the singularity is, but understanding if this singularity and somehow can lead to a better understanding of turbulence. I have not done, nor has anyone done, a decent calculation starting from a near singular condition and fully developed turbulence. I mean, Fosley has done some stuff with Melander a million years ago, so did I. And, you know, this is an important issue that involves, you know, a lot of real hard work. And I'd really like this. And that's it.
Yeah. Bob?
For me?
Sure.
Yeah,
ask me.
Near singularity. Not Navier-Stokes. Near singularities in Navier-Stokes.
They should appear at random.
That's correct.
And what is your simulation doing is an infinite
domain.
Domain with perfectly correlated singularities.
That's right.
So, and therefore I'm asking the question, how did
good question. I would like to know. I have weak evidence of near singularity starting from generalized initial conditions, but I've never continued that far enough to see if that is a generic property. The thing is, if you can do 1024 cubed now, for a lot of these generic initial conditions, we could get close enough in resolution to be able to say something about this.
After Eberhardt makes a remark. Yeah, okay. The homework for Bob Kerr is to break this down into smaller, doable problems. I mean, it's clear that this is a very important problem, detailed vortex interactions. But what does that mean? You have to break it down into smaller ones we can list here and do. That's your homework, Bob. To cut it down into smaller, doable problems. In the meantime, we listen to what Eberhardt has to say.
So basically what I want to get, you know, so far we have always mostly talked about theory, right?
Not at all.
Okay. What I think is that in general that in the next 5 years there will be a big progress in experimental techniques and experimental measurement techniques. There's so much new technology out there that will really give us a push, and we have computers that we had never before. We can now experimentally make data analysis that just was not possible before. I mean, you can see that, you know, we can now analyze large-scale simulations, which are gigabytes and gigabytes of data that needs to be analyzed, right? I mean, these are tasks which are very difficult to do. I mean, these are not things you do on the side. So I think there will be a big progress in experimental techniques just due to the increase in computer technology and also perhaps in nanotechnology, who knows? Now, one thing that's, of course, close to my heart is Lagrangian. I think that in the next 5 years, either our lab or somebody else will be able to give you multiple particle trajectories in intermediate scales, at large scales, at small scales. There will be data on Lagrangian trajectories of multiple particles. And one thing that I'm faced with is that the theoretical side of things that I can measure has really not been that developed. Right? It really has not been that developed. So if I want to ask intelligent questions, it's nice, you know, to have theorists think about these questions, also think about which are the ones we should address and which are the ones, you know, of course things develop, right? Just Lagrangian. Thank you. It's just really just to motivate. Just to think about this a little bit. Also other newest experiments, you know, like these ones. And where I also would like to encourage, I mean, it looks to me like we can make a lot of progress by looking at new quantities. Like, for example, we saw when Hershey looked at the pressure, right? Just quantities that we haven't looked at before. And, of course, I mean, if you think about it, the numerical simulations have everything they ever want, right? There's everything. That's what a numerical simulation does, right? You could do anything, right? You have all the data. You have the whole fluid field. You have everything. So the question is, how do we find questions, how to get out of this mess of data? Something that means something to everybody.
Thank you. Victor wants to make a remark, and then...
Let Fasman make the remark, Victor.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of
information. We don't need to know the intermediate state structure vector of the Lagrangian system. We don't know the constant there. We don't even know it.
Yeah, it varies in the literature by a factor of 1,000 or some such ridiculous number.
If we don't know the Lagrangian perspective, it really has not been investigated much. The point I'm making is that one thing to keep their progress, but I think I'm safe to ask.
Yeah.
Anything what happens tomorrow.
Both are exactly correct.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Victor?
I, I think what one should address, and which hasn't been addressed at least in the meeting that I participated in, is the following. Is the following. Do we believe that there are various levels of turbulent theory? Somehow we talk about turbulent theories in something which is somewhere. But judging by experience from critical phenomena, the Ising model, three-dimensional Ising model, hasn't been solved. But still, the situation in critical phenomena was at a certain level resolved by Wilson and by the renormalization group. And somehow, I don't know even a single person right now trying to solve the full problem. Because the number of observables which people understood was kind of satisfactory, good enough. So I think here we should also ask ourselves the following question. And you basically took words out of my mouth. Let's say we know all the structures. We have a computer. We know all of them. So we take a board. We list from A to Z all the structures. The question is, what do we do next? And here, I think, in my opinion, I believe that statistical theory dealing at a certain level with the faithful description of certain classes of phenomena is perfectly possible, and maybe this preoccupation with structures, this preoccupation with warmth or sheets and so on and so forth is very important, but only in the context of something like Cherkov, Pumir, and Scheimer. When you have a specific question, you have a specific term which you would like to understand, then you ask, let's make the simulation, let's find out which kind of structure contributes to this particular term and go from there. Otherwise, one can swim in the sea of structures and never get out and drown.
Thank you. Yeah. Before we yield the floor for Bill George, I would like to remark on what Victor said. What Victor is saying is, in some sense, not new at all. In some sense, it is new. The sense in which it is not new is that's what Reynolds did. Reynolds didn't ask for everything under the sun in the turbulent flow, but he wrote down the equations for moments, and later on people asked, well, what is this term like? How does the pressure-velocity correlation look like? Now, of course, Victor has taken it to a next level. That is, he's not writing for velocity at one point. He's writing for, say, probability density functions. So he's elevating the kind of complexity in the issue. But this is the approach that people have adopted all the time. The turbulence is a very big, messy animal. So there are different levels of description for the problem. It's like peeling different layers of onion. You want some aspects of it, some level of description is good enough. And you want to know something more, then you want to go further. But yet, there is one thing that has driven a lot of us, and that is, there is a solution to the problem. I mean, there may be maybe some aspects of it at least. There may be, and that is the one that sort of drives a number of people. But the fact that this one core problem somehow solves everything else under the sun, if there is such a concept, is an illusion. I mean, it is not going to be like that. But now let's. If you want to be recorded for posterity, you have to be a little less lazy and come up here.
You think it takes that long?
My dad used to say that when you throw a stone into a packet of cards, it comes off. The one that gets hit probably loses its
Okay, the point I think is perhaps well known to the experimentalists is that it is indeed, I don't think there is any need to emphasize the difference between the approaches of the people who study turbulence as a statistical phenomenon and those who study specific events in turbulence like pairing, tearing, you know, roll up, and physical space cascade, as we have tried, including how turbulence regenerates itself near the wall I talked about. But the underlying motivation is, I think contrary to what Victor would have, I think, perceived to be, is that turbulence consists of many facets of deterministic events or understandable events. So there is some generic feature. Turbulence is not totally chaotic field. Therefore, if you understand each of these events, perhaps, obviously, there will have to be a statistical integration of these events to explain turbulence, as opposed to blindly taking at a stochastic process and then hope that you will have solved turbulence problem. So there are two different approaches, but I think goal is the same. Thanks.
I don't disagree with that. In fact, what I wanted to just comment on briefly is how I think we make progress in this field, or perhaps why we don't make more progress than we do. Look, we don't know a heck of a lot about turbulence. For something we've studied 100 years, it's remarkable how little we know. The fact is that in spite of how little we know, we're incredibly adamant about the things we think we know. I'm going to give an example. I just got a review this morning, a very short little paper, and it was about on the possibility of exponential decay for turbulence with confined length scale. The first line in the review says, this paper is clearly ridiculous because everybody knows turbulence decays like a power law. Well, in fact, to the best of our ability to determine, there are no measurements of turbulence with confined length scale, with the possible exception the one that Ross Donnelly showed us, and he was very careful not to draw a line on that curve, if you notice. It's ridiculous the way we treat each other in this field. I mean, you heard reactions through all the week. The first thing I think we can do to make progress is start assuming that the other people are not stupid. Seriously. If we don't understand it, or if it doesn't agree with something we learned as a graduate student and fixed in our mind, we immediately presume it's stupid. Now, you know, not necessarily this group, but this field as a whole. And all you got to do is just look at the reviews you get back. Most of them are by people who never read the paper. And it's very easy to establish that. The second point I would like to make, and I totally agree with Srini's point here, raise our level, and I would say for both theoreticians and experimentalists. Now, I think you did, yeah. Now, let me elaborate on it. I play a little bit in both camps here. Theoreticians, I think you need to be more skeptical when experimentalists present you with results. I mean, we saw, we had a very good discussion here about these probability distributions and whether you can be making statements about moments and the kinds of things that, that people have routinely reported and people have argued about. I think you have to start demanding that experimentalists do a better job. Experimentalists, I think you've got to be more theoretical. And this stems in part from a discussion that Gunter and I had at lunch today. I don't think it's terribly useful, and I'm not picking on that community in particular, because I'm as guilty, I'm an experimentalist too, but when people keep plotting new cell versus Rayleigh number plots and arguing over what the exponent is, this doesn't tell me a damn thing as a theoretician. I want to know, here's what I want to know. If the theory says Rayleigh cubed, or Rayleigh one-third, and it's based on statistical homogeneity across here without any mean flow, I want to know whether there are organized cellular motions in there. Because if they are, that changes everything in the problem. And in other words, you can't do good experiments if you don't know the theory. Because you have to do experiments to sort the theory. So I guess in part that's my response to what you've told us about the Lagrangian stuff. You will do lousy experiments unless you carefully glean through the literature on Lagrangian theory. And there's a lot of it. Now, I'm not picking on that problem specifically. Okay, I've said my piece. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, theory has a role to play in experiments, but experiments have a life of their own independent of theory. And surely, Bill, if there is such a power law with absolute certainty, with an exponent that is absolutely anchored, that will anchor a number of theories, for instance. So it has a value. Anything. That may be so. No. I think Gunter wants to make a remark, perhaps something like. No, disagree more, yeah. Yes, empirical science, yeah. The point is made, and I think we will leave it at that. In a few minutes, we have to vacate this place. So Marshall has a remark to make, and maybe there is room for one more remark, and then we'll quit. Yeah. I have here.
I should put zero for this number.
All right.
Yeah.
Marshall, you are very close to us. The people are here for the next few months. You should come and tell us about it. How is that? No, but
I think Narasimha wants to make a comment, and I'll assure.
It's a very brief one. first of all, I want to say that I think what's on the board is an excellent summary of the situation. And as one who doesn't attend too many meetings where small scales and structure functions are discussed in great detail, I am quite impressed by the progress that's occurred, and in particular the things that Srinivasan has listed there and the other additions that have been made. But I want to support what Marshall Tulin said, and he said very much what I in fact intended to say, namely that the middle box here, I think that the middle box here is very important, and I may be prejudiced in thinking that the middle box here is certainly a central set of issues, but what I would like very much to see is that if there's going to be another meeting in ITP 5 years from now, that as many clever people as are gathered here, looking at using all their clever tools, will also be using them in the problems here. I think that the ideas required for handling that are now around. There are very clever people in looking at stability. There's a lot of work on the mix of order and disorder in turbulent flows, and in particular in large scales. And I think it would be highly worthwhile to make a major effort for quite a large number of the kind of clever people who are assembled here to look at those problems.
Thank you. I think we should pretty much close this because the hall is reserved for somebody else in a few minutes. But if there is a pressing point to be made, we could make it. But otherwise, thank you. Well, thank you.